You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 13th of September 2012 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Midori House, coming to you live from the 2012 World Design Capital Helsinki with me, Markus Hippi, and Andrew Tuck.
On today's programme, we'll meet the US Ambassador to Finland, Bruce Orek, to talk about how he won over the Finns with some unique diplomatic tools, and also for his reaction to the murder of his colleague, Christopher Stevens, the US Ambassador to Libya.
Then we'll be joined in the studio by the editor-in-chief of the biggest Nordic newspaper, Helsingin Sanomat, to find out why Finns still love newspapers.
We'll also get lessons on how to have a successful visit to a Finnish sauna.
Helsinki and Finnish cities have had tradition and culture of public baths for a very long time. And Helsinki used to have over 200 public saunas in the 1920s, for example. Now there's only three left.
And we get a crash course in Finnish culture with Lissu Multun, who moved from Manhattan to Helsinki via Nakkila, a small village with a school, a church and a few inhabitants.
All that and some great tips from two locals on how to make cities more exciting right here on Monocle 24, live from Helsinki.
And now the latest news from around the world with Jonathan Wheatley.
US authorities say they're investigating claims that militants planned the attack on their consulate in Benghazi, in which the US ambassador to Libya was killed, along with three other Americans and at least 10 Libyans. Whether the attack was planned by jihadists or a protest against a US film which made fun of the Prophet Muhammad is still not clear, but protests are continuing at US embassies in Cairo, Tunis and the Yemeni's capital Sana'a, and at the Swiss embassy in Tehran, which acts for the Americans there. Stephen Klein, who was an advisor on the film, who's been identified as a Christian with links to far-right extremists, said he didn't feel in any way responsible for the attack or for anti-American protests sparked by the film.
If I talked to you about this movie, would you go out and kill anybody? No. Would the vast majority of Muslims do it? No. Would a very small fraction whose DNA, genomes, their psyche, everything revolves around this insane behavior, would they go out and do it? Yeah, they would do it. Do I have blood on my hands? No. Did I kill this guy? No.
Jailed Ukrainian opposition leader Yulia Tymoshenko has today accused President Viktor Yanukovych of using Stalinist methods against her after prison officials confiscated devices which she said revealed high radiation levels in her hospital quarters. The former prime minister accused Yanukovych, her political foe, of being behind the unusually high dosages of radiation in her hospital ward. She made her allegations in a statement on her party's website after prison officials carried out a search of her hospital room in the city of Kharkiv, where she's confined with back trouble, and took away some of her possessions. The British Foreign Secretary, William Hague, has met his Iraqi counterpart, Hoshira Zebari, in Baghdad and says Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's rule will soon be over.
We believe that the Assad regime is doomed, that it is not possible for it to survive, and so many crimes committed that it should not survive. So we believe in the creation of a transitional government, which would be able to bring peace and stability to Syria again. And of course, as we've discussed, we as the UK look to Iraq to contribute to that.
The German Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle has today welcomed the re-election of Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte, one of the few European leaders to survive an election during the Eurozone crisis. The victory of two centrist pro-European parties in the general election yesterday was hailed by analysts and investors as a sign that one of Europe's richest countries remained a close ally of Berlin. A British film producer has been charged in Uganda's capital Kampala after screening his short film without proper authorization from the Uganda Media Council. David Cecil, who produced The River and the Mountain, a drama depicting the condition of Uganda's gay community, was denied bail and remanded in custody until the 17th of September. Well, gay rights activist John Wambere said the arrest was a ploy by the government to silence the gay community in the country.
Until the government lets people speak out, and people get to know. The issue of homosexuality will still remain a debate, not until the government decides to give the people the opportunity to express themselves. We are among the public, among the society. So for someone who tried to help or to bring up a play to educate or sensitize people about the reality of people who are within them gets arrested and prosecuted.
Staying in Africa, and Zimbabwe's Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai's plan to get married this weekend faced a second legal challenge today from another woman who said she was romantically involved with him, fueling a scandal that has already hurt his reputation. The dispute has handed long-serving President Robert Mugabe political ammunition as he seeks to extend his three-decade rule in an election expected within a year, since Tsvangirai his main rival. Nosipho Regina Shilumbane, a South African woman, lodged a legal challenge to try to block the Premier's wedding the day after the High Court threw out an application by another former lover to halt the ceremony. And those are the stories at the top of the hour here on Monocle 24.
Jonathan, it's 8:06 here in Helsinki, which means it's 2:06 in Tokyo, 18:06 in London, and 10:06 in Los Angeles. And I'm here with Marcus Hippie.
Again,
it's 2 days now in Helsinki, and I think we're getting used to it.
I think we're getting quite used to it. How have you found it this far?
Well, I've been doing a story for The Urbanist today, which is I've been going out to look at the suburbs of Helsinki, which is not where many tourists go. But I'm doing a story about that. There's an amazing suburb called Tapiola, which was built in the 50s and 60s.
I used to live quite close to it earlier. Did you know?
No, I didn't know. They don't have a plaque up for you yet. I think they're going to wait a little bit.
But waiting for that special moment.
I went to see what they're going to do about the suburbs here around Helsinki, because there's a big debate about suburbs around the world. But in Helsinki, they're actually doing something about it. So there's a bit of a rivalry between Espoo and Vantaa.
And Helsinki as well.
How was that pronunciation?
It's getting better.
You've told me off for so many words today. It's not been a very good day for me on my Finnish pronunciation.
No, that's the way it goes. First, I have to break you into pieces, your self-esteem, and then slowly but surely, gradually, just give you a few years and you'll get better. One day you'll realise that you can say something.
I've got to roll my R's more, which I've been doing. It's a bit Scottish, actually.
That sounds really Scottish. What I did today, I spent a big part
of... I haven't asked you what you did today.
I still want
I'm
to
not
tell
that
you.
Interested.
I'm so excited about being here. What I did today, I actually spent surprisingly a big part of the day trying to organise Adrian Craddock's, Monocle's own Adrian Craddock, Australian. His sauna trip. It's surprisingly difficult getting to a public sauna in Helsinki with a radio recorder.
I know, and also with Adrian Craddock, who's got a bit of a phobia about taking his clothes off at the best of times.
Well, he's never done it before, bless him.
Well, I think he's taking his clothes off when he's gone to bed, maybe, but certainly not in public.
He was so nervous. I took him to sauna. I didn't go there with him because I think that would have been slightly intimidating for him. You should have seen his face when he was taken there behind the door.
Does he know about the webcam?
No, he doesn't know about the webcam.
Okay.
But anyway, I've been going through Finnish papers.
Give us some headlines.
Actually, I was doing internet research. Finland is very technological. I don't have the actual paper copies over here. But I was checking out Helsingin Sanomat website. And one piece of news that's a big discussion topic, obviously, since we are in Finland. The publication of iPhone 5 did not affect Nokia share prices. At last, something good about Nokia.
But isn't that because they're so low already they can't go any lower?
I'm afraid. But anyway, it didn't get any worse than that. And another news topic I want to mention in specific.
Are you about to show me a picture?
I'm going to show you a picture. There's a new world record. The biggest dog in the world.
Yes.
A Great Dane.
But I think we may have a challenger to that dog.
We do have a challenger. Do you want to tell about that?
Yes. Well, we shouldn't introduce the ambassador just yet, but the ambassador from the United States is here in our studio, and he's brought along Deckard, who's his dog, and he's a very, very big dog, and very fluffy, and very clean, and he's kind of sitting very quietly here. He's still here. You've not noticed him. He's under the table.
Oh, he's under the table.
He's sitting there very quietly. But we'll come to Deckard and perhaps the US ambassador in just a moment, because you're listening to a very special edition of Midori House that's coming to you live from Helsinki.
London, Toronto, Tokyo.
Hong Kong, Zurich, London.
Londres, Toronto, Tokyo.
Essa é a Monocle 24.
Hong Kong, Zurich, London. Das ist Monocle 24.
Hong Kong,
Zurich,
London.
Esto es Monaco 24.
Hong Kong, Zurich, London. Това е Monaco 24.
From London.
In London.
London, Cara.
De Londres.
This is Monaco 24.
And it's just coming up to 10 minutes past 8. And I'm smiling because there's a giant dog staring at me from the end of the table, who looks very gorgeous. And we're having a very special edition of Midori House, Dogs and All, coming to you live from the Finnish Broadcasting Company studios in Helsinki.
Andrew, I've never seen you this excited. It's the dog.
It is the dog, I'm afraid.
Well, anyway, our first guest today is the US ambassador to Finland, Bruce Orek. In a small nation such as Finland, an ambassador can soon become a well-known character for good or bad, and Ambassador Orek ticks the first box. Wherever you go in Helsinki, people have a warm word to say about him. His soft power tools include being a bit of an environmentalist, keeping bees, and an unstuffy manner. Oh, and he's also a bodybuilder. He joins us in the studio now to talk about the art of diplomacy. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to Midori House.
Marcus, thank you for having me. Andrew, nice to see you too.
Nice to see you. Perhaps we could just very quickly, we don't want to dwell on this, but just quickly get a comment from you on the events that are unfolding both in Libya and now in Cairo and Sana'a as well.
Sure. Well, I think that the White House has been very clear on speaking to the events writ large. So I think what's really appropriate only from my standpoint is to speak on my own behalf and that of all of the members of the embassy here to extend our condolences to the family of Ambassador Stevens and the other Americans who gave their lives in service of their country. We are very grateful and we're very sad.
Now, Bruce, we gave you a bit of a light introduction, but it's really important. It's quite genuine. Wherever we've gone and we've told people who's coming on these shows and we've mentioned your name, people, I've seen him in the street, or, you know, actually he goes to my gym, or they've all got a story about you. Now, that's an amazing thing because, you know, let's be honest, lots of diplomats around the world aren't that welcome, and you're from a big country which, you know, again needs to kind of present a softer image of itself sometimes, like all big countries, and you seem to do that quite effortlessly. How have you broken all the molds in a way of what it needs to be an ambassador?
Well, that's very kind of you to say that. I think anybody who sees me realizes right away that I probably don't fit the standard mold. For those, since we're in the radio, I have a shaved head and I wear an earring, and as Marcus mentioned, I was a competitive bodybuilder for many years, so I'm hard to miss. But I think, you know, my wife and I, as we came here, we sort of looked inwards and said, what is it about America that uniformly people like around the world? I mean, because there's certainly aspects of our country and our personalities that are off-putting to people. But around the world, people love the fact that Americans have a very can-do, optimistic spirit, and that we can be extremely open and genuine, and we're not, we don't have to be stuffy and have artifice. And so we came and decided, let's just be genuine Americans. And we love being here. We love discovering new things and really integrating ourselves in the world of Finland and Finns. And I think that resonates with people, that you care about them.
Do you think there's still some kind of a code or a pattern how an ambassador should behave abroad? When you talked about, you know, how you've been relaxed in a way, I remember cover of Helsingin Sanomat kuukausiliite. It was quite a while ago. But anyway, you were there in the cover of a magazine without a shirt.
Don't tell them back in Washington. No, they know that. I kid about that because... yes, I was a bodybuilder. You know, we ended up with, that wasn't my idea, that was their idea. But I also kid about the fact that even today, with so many women in leadership roles in this country, notwithstanding that I have done more diplomacy naked than any other ambassador around the globe in the sauna. Let me clarify that. Finns have a tremendously exciting, robust, a passion for life, and they like all sorts of interesting things, and so it's very easy to get swept away in the excitement of being in Finland.
And can I ask you, what's interesting is you are in a very safe country. It must be a very different posting, not just the events we're hearing at the top of the show, But does that mean that you can have a bit more of an open door policy? And I think that's not just for US embassy staff. You see that with Western European staff all around the world. They want to be more engaged. They wish they could open their doors a bit more often to members of the public. But they feel that security issues and concerns mean that they're sometimes a little bit standoffish. And there's this idea of almost being in a fortress, which they don't want to be in.
Absolutely. We're very fortunate to be in Finland, which is an extremely safe country. We work very well with the police authorities here. And I think, as with all things in life, it's a balance. I put myself out there as much as I can, and I do that. I travel a lot, speaking on the issues that are relevant to me and to the White House in terms of the climate change or high-performance buildings and energy efficiency and new energy. And so I travel all over, and I put myself out there. But it's a balance. You sort of have to read when are you going a bridge too far.
When you think of U.S.-Finnish relations, what would you like to improve?
Boy, that's a hard thing to do. One of the great things about Finland is that we have such fundamental shared values. So despite there may be differences in short-term or even some long-term political policies, our fundamental shared values for democracy, civil rights, respect for the rule of law, trying to have a positive impact throughout the world, these are really basic parts of the Finnish DNA, and we share that with them. And so it's great to try and ride in tandem with a partner who has as much good sense as Finland does.
And community-wise, is there a very substantial American community here in Finland? And how many Finns actually live back in the States?
A tremendous number of Finns in the States. There are more Finnish Americans in America than there are Finns in Helsinki. And tremendous amount of travel to the U.S. back and forth. We don't have that large a full-time expat community, about between 5,000 and 6,000 Americans. But there's a tremendous amount of cultural exchange back and forth all the time.
I think it's interesting about Finland, being Finnish myself as well. This country.
In fact, you don't sound Finnish.
Oh, but it's been hard. I do sound Finnish, actually, if you listen to me carefully. I know it's like Finnish people sometimes have a low self-esteem. And I know I used to work here before, and I know that one regular thing in the news you have is that the Finnish president once again did not get an invitation to the White House. How often do you have to answer these questions, you know, about, like, you know, what is going on? Why Finnish presidents don't get to go
So let
there?
Me answer that in a different way. The world is a terribly difficult place today. And so in many respects, not meeting with the president means you're doing things just great. You know, the president's time is so consumed with fixing car crashes around the globe of one form or fashion that there's very little time to, frankly, just meet with your friends because they're your friends. That's a terrible reality in the world today. I'm hopeful that in a second term, the president would be able to meet with President Niinistö. They have met. They just haven't had a formal White House meeting. I have certainly asked, and we've been in that conversation a great deal. But I think that one really positive way to look at that is that, you know, you haven't had to go meet with the principal, if you will. Not that, you know, he's in charge of anybody, but it's the world is just a complicated place.
Well, Ambassador, thank you so much for coming in, and thank you for bringing Deckard as well. Yeah. We should say Deckard is now sleeping on the floor. That's the first guest we've actually had lie down on the floor during the show, and he's a very welcome guest indeed. But anyway, that was the US Ambassador to Finland, who's Bruce Orek.
Thank you so much. You are listening to the Midori House live from Helsinki. Along with the other Nordic countries and Japan, Finns are among the world's top newspaper readers. And we'll speak about the Finnish fascination with print with Mikael Pentikäinen, the editor-in-chief of the biggest Nordic newspaper, Helsingin Sanomat, after this short break.
Be our guest and come spend the weekend with Monocle 24. We kick off on Saturday with the Weekend Edition, a smart, relaxing selection of music, news headlines and great conversation.
There's real excitement there, you know, and it's sort of like, wow, I don't really understand what they're doing, but I love the sound of it.
Then join us for our brand new show, The Stack, celebrating the world of print media, from chunky Korean glossies to fine-tuned Brazilian newspapers. Hosted by Tyler Brulé, each week we pull in guest reviewers to crack open spines and thumb through inky pages to reveal why there's more to journalism than going digital.
The publication you have in your hand is all about women across the Middle East. The one in your hand is about skiing in Morocco. They have one about the Saudi pavilion in the Osaka Expo. So it was very progressive.
Later, the Saturday Review casts a critical eye over the week's literature, music, TV, cinema and the arts and delivers some fun, fast-paced conversation too.
It's a bit of a riot, actually. They just boiled the crayfish in water.
That sounds like a riot so far.
On Sunday, stay over for the Monocle Weekly, our longest-running radio show that brings our editors face-to-face with everyone from academics to war correspondents, historians to social commentators, and serves up some fine music too.
I sort of came to Brazilian music quite late. Yeah, it's something that I'm still discovering.
And don't miss The Curator, our one-hour survey of the week's highlights on Monocle 24. That's the new weekend lineup on Monocle 24.
And you're listening to Midori House, live from Helsinki, with me, Andrew Tuck, and Marcus Hippy.
Finns, like all Nordic people, are keen on newspapers. Currently, they are perhaps the most avid readers in the world. To explain why and to tell us about the changes in the Finnish media scene, we are now joined by Mikael Pentikäinen, senior editor-in-chief of Helsingin Sanomat, the biggest Nordic newspaper. Hello and welcome to Midori House.
Thank you.
So can you tell us about the background? Why is it that Finns seem to love reading so much?
It's a good question, and I have heard it many times from my colleagues abroad. I think there are many reasons for that. One of them is the strong reading culture in Finland and strong newspaper reading culture. Already young kids learn to read their newspapers at home. They are used very much in schools, and I think that is one of the reasons. Another reason is that the Finnish newspapers, they play a big role in building the local regional identity. And it's usually so that at the one city area or local area there is one newspaper. And the role of the newspaper in the identity building of that area is very important and has been historically. And maybe third reason is that the service level of Finnish newspaper is very good. Almost all Finnish newspapers are brought to people's homes, home delivered, before 6:30 every morning throughout the year. When it's shining, when it's snowing, when it's raining, but you get the paper at the morning for your morning coffee, and I think that's very important for the popularity of Finnish newspapers.
And Mikael, can I ask you that obviously you're in a very technically aware country as well, though, is there not the drift to people wanting to read their newspapers online or on mobile platforms, and how are you managing to make sure that if there is that change, that you keep hold of making some profit along the way? Do you have paywalls here in Finland? Are you very strict about how people have access to your online content?
The change which is happening throughout the globe in the media business is happening also in Finland. And what we see today is that more and more people are reading the news from mobile devices or from their computers or tablets or whatever gadgets they are using, and of course that is having some influence in the popularity of the newspapers. For instance, in the case of Helsingin Sanomat, we have every day 1.3 million Finns reading our website and almost 1 million Finns reading our newspaper every day, which means that approximately every fourth Finn consumes regularly our services. And of course, one of the great benefits of this new technology and news service is that you can read our news in Los Angeles whenever you want to, in Tokyo, in Cairo, wherever you are traveling, and that's a great opportunity today thanks to this big change.
But you're making money from that. Because what happens is most of the newspapers, they start giving away their content online, and then that's when things begin to get troublesome, even in strong newspaper markets.
In our case, the money is still coming from the newspaper business, from the print business, but the digital side of our business is growing fast, and of course it's always difficult when you have a totally integrated news production system, that how do you share the cost between the digital service and the print service. So it's always a little bit speculative to analyze, do you make profit with the digital business, but of course we earn some money from that, but it's still a minor share of our income.
Well, conclusions now after quite a few years of this financial crisis, also in Finland, when it comes to the Finnish media scene, who have been the losers and have there really been winners?
There have been winners, and if you look at the market share in the advertising market, the winners have been mostly from the internet business. All well-known international internet players like Google, Facebook, taking some part of the market share in advertising. And the newspapers have been the news business or news media business which has been losing most, but still they have very significant part of the Finnish media market, and most of the advertising money goes to the newspapers.
And tell me, what makes a good story for you here in Helsinki when you're editing the paper on a day-to-day basis? Is it good local news stories that take the front page, or are you keeping a network of foreign correspondents and trying to report on events that we've just heard about from the North Africa? What makes a good story for you?
Well, there are a lot of or many kinds of good stories. In our case, of course, we have two identities. We are both regional daily for the Great Helsinki area, but we are also a national newspaper in Finland, and therefore, in our case, international coverage is extremely important. We have 8 correspondents abroad, and we are, I think, the only Finnish newspaper who has invested so much to the international coverage, and international news are very important for us. But also, of course, we have to be the best and the first telling the regional news and the domestic news too.
Well, the last question, Helsingin Sanomat name refers to News of Helsinki. How is the balance? You are anyway a national paper at the same time between Helsinki and the rest of the country.
Usually when you are published at the capital area like we are here in Finland, what happens in Helsinki usually interests people abroad or in other cities of Finland, and therefore things which interest the people in Great Helsinki area usually have some importance also throughout the country.
Well, thank you very much for coming to see us today. We'd like to have kept you here a bit longer because there's so many more things to ask you about the world of the Finnish media.
During the next half hour on this special outing of Midori House, we'll be going naked in the name of sauna research, finding out how to live among Finns and looking at how the city is changing. But before all this, we have news headlines, and before the news, this is Song from Finland, Regina and Unessa.
Now, in a moment, we're going to be finding out how Helsinki is being taken over by its residents. And there's also the moment the world has been waiting for, Adrian Craddock, butt naked.
That's going to be amazing. But first, here is Jonathan Wheatley with the news headlines.
Thanks very much, Marcus. US authorities say they're investigating claims that militants planned the attack on their consulate in Benghazi, in which the US ambassador to Libya was killed along with 3 other Americans and at least 10 Libyans. Whether the attack was planned by jihadists or a protest against a US film which made fun of the Prophet Muhammad is still not clear, but protests are continuing at US embassies in Cairo, Tunis and the Yemeni's capital Sana'a, and at the Swiss embassy in Tehran, which acts for the Americans there. Jailed Ukrainian opposition leader Yulia Tymoshenko has today accused President Viktor Yanukovych of using Stalinist methods against her after prison officials confiscated devices which she said revealed high radiation levels in her hospital quarters. The former prime minister accused Yanukovych of being behind the unusually high dosages of radiation in her hospital ward. The British Foreign Secretary William Hague has met his Iraqi counterpart in Baghdad and says Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's rule will soon be over. The German Foreign Minister Geert Westerwelle has today welcomed the re-election of Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte, one of the few European leaders to survive an election during the Eurozone crisis. And a British film producer has been charged in Uganda's capital Kampala after screening his short film without proper authorization from the Uganda Media Council. David Cecil, who produced a drama depicting the condition of Uganda's gay community, was denied bail and remanded in custody until the 17th of September. More news at the top of the hour.
Now, for many Finns, saunas aren't just a luxury, they're a necessity. Throughout the country, there are over 500,000 of them, all full of sweaty Finns taking part in that ancient tradition of pouring water over the hot stones. It's not for the faint-hearted. Unlike other variations, Finnish saunas reach temperatures of up to 100 degrees Celsius. Oh, and clothes are strictly forbidden.
Andrew, would you do that? Or have you done that?
I would do it, but I wouldn't have done it if any money in the world, if it meant stopping Adrian Craddock doing it. Because this has been perhaps the highlight of my day, seeing him worried, sweating. Well, we didn't see him sweating. I think that was after we left him.
When I saw him after that sauna thing, I thought he was violated, but then I realised that he was just relaxed.
No, I think you would be cautious about your English. He had a good time. Do you want to do that?
Anyway, about the saunas. Despite their popularity, there hasn't been a new public sauna built in Helsinki for decades. Until now, Tuomas Toivonen is an architect who is just months off opening Culture Sauna, a contemporary take on the nation's favourite pastime. So who better than to give Monocle's Adrian Craddock a crash course in Finnish sauna culture, butt naked.
So we leave our shoes here.
Okay.
You have their own little compartment. You can put your valuables in a small drawer.
I'm kind of nervous, Thomas.
Yeah. So the main attraction is the wood burning sauna, which is just around the corner.
So we're not actually in the sauna yet, because it's quite hot in here. I thought we were actually here.
No, this is not it. this is the dressing room, and below on the ground floor there's a pool. I think it's 25 meters.
Okay.
Pool, and it's always been a nude pool and kind of a nude bath. So since the 20s, it's alternative days for men and women, and I think a couple of years ago it was for the first time it was allowed to wear a swimsuit, but I don't think anyone does that. So you just look at how other people behave, and I think you'll be fine.
I'm kind of nervous, man. I've never. I don't know. It'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. Oh Jesus. Oh dear. So, taking off the old belt. And I'm nude. There it is. It's very hot now. Mate, it's really hot in here. What is it? No, it's like, oh my god, it just hits you in the face. So, what's the feeling that you get after the sauna? What's the appeal of the sauna?
Well, I think we're going to feel it after the sauna, aren't we? But it's very kind of deeply relaxing. So as you you kind of move between hot and the hot and the cold. It speeds up your metabolism, and you sweat, and somehow I guess you feel a kind of, you feel purified, mm-hmm. and then you feel very relaxed in general, mm-hmm. and it's a feeling that that you start to miss when you don't have it.
Mm-hmm. So guys, just come in. He's gonna put some steam on. There we go. Hear that.
Authentic voice is coming.
Oh yeah.
It increases the moisture.
Right, let's head out.
Right. Let's call again at the end. You're in the room. Yes. Let's go ahead and get people who are playing all my other athletes. Yeah. You're making it. Sorry.
Oh, that feeling is pretty amazing. Like now it's like really refreshing. So we've just come out. Now it's time to get in the showers again.
So you were saying there's a cafe here, there's a pool, there's lots of things that you can do here. But you have this new idea for Helsinki. Can you explain it a bit? Can you explain what your idea is?
Well, Helsinki and Finnish cities have had this tradition and culture of public baths, public bathing in the form of sauna for a very long time. And Helsinki used to have over 200 public saunas in the 1920s, for example. Now there's only three left, this one, and then two in Kallio on the kind of east side of the center. And so there's like three, four saunas left out of the 200, and there hasn't been a new public sauna for about 50 years. And somehow the building that we're now constructing, that we will run together with my wife starting the end of this year, it's definitely a sauna. It's primarily a sauna, but it does have, like here, it has the opportunity to swim, in our case in the sea. It's situated just on the waterfront, so the building two facades actually rise out from the harbor. Mm-hmm. And then we have a courtyard which is kind of enclosed by the building on three sides, and one side is just the sea. And so there's an opportunity to swim like here, and also we have a small cafe, kind of kiosk inside with a cafe, or it's the space where you go to kind of sit like we are right now, with a bathrobe or a towel on and maybe have a drink, because you lose a lot of moisture when you're in the sauna by sweating. You really need to replenish. So drinking and then eating something salty is really nice. It's really part of the experience, so it makes sense to have an opportunity for that. So it's typically either a sausage or some pickles or something like this, and then things to drink.
We've just ordered some mead, yeah. Funnily enough. So cheers.
Sima.
Yeah. It's very civilized.
It is. They make it here. It's their. This is one of the few places where you can drink mead in September.
Amazing. As the founder and also as an architect, those two roles, it must be a pretty impressive building. I imagine that you've kind of. It must be something else.
Well, I think the sauna as a building type is really exciting from an architectural point of view. I mean, if you think of a museum, you need to have a collection, or you know, you need to have the works there, or in a restaurant you need to have the food. But the sauna is a building where the architecture actually produces the experience. But it needs to be an architecture of where you can't make any shortcuts, you can't do compromises, because it's, you know, looking at it from a kind of, you know, physics, it's extremely hot, there's a lot of humidity, the kind of flow of air, the flow of people, the dimensions, there's a lot of extremes. It has to really perform well functionally, it has to perform well technically, it has to perform well from a mood point of view, and then you know, it really has to kind of come together in a special way. And this is all, the entire experience is produced by architecture, and in our case also the kind of the possibility to propose a building on an extremely unusual site in the center of, in the kind of heart of the city, and to kind of somehow manage to negotiate it through all the possible obstacles and actually make it happen.
So should we head off? Should we go?
Yeah, why not? Do you feel refreshed?
Absolutely. Yeah. It wasn't that bad at all. It was actually quite nice.
Yeah.
It wasn't weird at all.
No, this is very classic.
Wow, Adrian, I'm proud of you. You survived.
Look, I'm going to come on here and talk about this if everyone's approaches it with the correct level of maturity. All right? I'm just going to preface my conversation with that.
Okay. And culturally, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it is pretty confronting.
coming from, you know, regional Western Australia, I've never had any kind of experience like that. But, you know, the thing that you don't really gather from that package is when I was interviewing that guy in the sauna, there are three levels, and the top level is the hottest because hot air rises. And he went straight for the top level. We were sitting side by side on the top level, and it was too much for me. It was too hot. It's like 90 degrees or something. So I just thought, I might just have some time off here. So I went down to the second level and continued to interview him, but then just kind of realized I was head height with something I shouldn't have been. So I decided, even though it was so hot, I went back up to the top level, all in the name of Monocle 24 top class reporting.
Would you do that reporting?
Oh, yeah.
Would you do that again?
Yeah, it's really nice. It was actually really, really nice. I mean, we're making fun of it now.
No, we're not making fun of it. We're making fun of you. There's a subtle difference. We think sauna's important.
You know what? When we go back to London, I'm going to... I don't know how it works at Midori House. Like, you know, do you have to write a paper or something if you want to suggest that we get our own sauna in there?
Yes, well...
I'm not comfortable with that. I don't think that would benefit anyone to have a sauna in Midori House. I don't want to see anyone else. That package was fine because I'll meet that guy once. I'll never see him again. If I had to see either of you in any kind of sauna context, I wouldn't be cool with that. I don't know how you feel, but that's how I feel.
Okay, we'll discuss this later after we've had a drink or two.
We'll discuss this with our clothes on in a mature setting, not in a sauna.
Okay, well, that was Monocle's Adrian, I'm Naked Craddock, reporting. And we'll be looking at how the pop-up concept got a Finnish makeover in a minute.
Monocle Film stepped into the kitchen to watch Chef Jonathan Conroy prepare the perfect summer meal. A traditional Turkish starter, spaghetti vongole from the Med, and a quintessential British classic, the raspberry trifle, deliciously take shape on screen.
The fresh coriander is a really important thing. You have to be heavy-handed on that. Over-generous on the coriander. It's meant that every flavour should pack a punch.
Summer on a plate, on film, on monocle.com.
You're listening to Monocle 24, broadcasting from Midori House at 1 Dorset Street, London, W1. Monocle 24 is a wholly owned subsidiary of Wing Content and is edited by Tyler Brulé and Andrew Tuck. With bureaus in Tokyo, Hong Kong, Zurich and New York, Monocle 24 has over 50 editors and correspondents filing for us around the clock. If you have any editorial, distribution or advertising queries, please email us at info@monocle.com. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
And it's 20:45 here in Helsinki, and you're listening to a very special live edition of Midori House coming to you live from Finland. Now, Helsinki seems to have woken up to a whole new level of kind of developments in the city. One of these things is restaurant days, where individuals can launch their own pop-up restaurants at their homes or in the streets of Helsinki. The World Design Capital Year has also seen many other events taking place, flea markets in surprising places, and tours to previously unknown corners of the city, in addition to street parties and block parties too.
Well, to tell us more about what is going on over here and how the people of Helsinki have started using the public space in new ways, we are now joined by Simo Vassinen and Anna Pakarinen, who both have been working to make Helsinki a more exciting place to live. Could you describe this change yourselves? What's been happening in Helsinki during the last years? All of a sudden it seems that there is so much going on over here and people have sort of woken up to do something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's been a fairly recent change during the past year or year or two, and it's just been a sort of like a little explosion that people have been very active in pursuing different initiatives and also coming up with easy and fun things to sort of, you know, participate in, and I think it's been really important that the city has given out a message that, you know, things like this are okay.
And Simo, is that coming from City Hall? Is it because City Hall's got involved and said,
actually we need to kind of loosen up some rules here and allow people to do more spontaneous things in the city that's begun? Or was it a kind of grassroots thing, people just thinking, actually, do you know what, this city needs a bit of a shake up?
I think it's definitely been a bottom up approach. Like the activities came first and then the okay came after.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember how Restaurant Day started over here. It basically came from people's frustration with quite tight health and safety regulations. And all of a sudden, one day, people just decided that, hey, we're going to have our own pop-up restaurants as our homes, so even on the streets.
And Anna, could you just tell us a little bit about that Restaurant Day? Because it's become a huge thing, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, actually, this is the thing that Timo knows better. Yeah, because he's been part of it. But yeah, and I'd like to say that it's not only losing the rules, it's people need to want the change. They need to do the change themselves. So it's, of course, there is rules also. But first, you have to have an idea and
then change it from there. And Sim, tell us, just give us a little bit of colour from Restaurant Day. So it's outdoors, it's a summer event, and how many people now create these pop-up restaurants?
Well, it's actually turned into a year-round event. There's now, it started a year ago in May, and now there's been a Restaurant Day every 3 months, so it's four times a year. So it's also, I think it's also really important to come up with, not just summer fun, because, you know, any city can be a fun sort of summer city, and it's always easier to come up with something when the weather is nice. But it's even more important to come up with something when you know, you look outside and it's not as cheery.
And how many restaurants would you see on one of these events then popping up?
Well, I don't have the recent numbers in, but it's in the hundreds.
Wow.
What do you see coming up in the future? I know that, Anna, you've been planning something that's got something to do with what to do with parking slots for cars.
Well, yeah, yes. There is a lot of cars in the city center of Helsinki, and they are taking a good place and being there. And the day is 21st of September.
And people can do something with
something,
the parking slots. So
yes,
cars won't
definitely.
Be there. Instead, there will be what on the parking slots?
Something like there is definitely, we are making an office to one parking slot. And then there is many, many other ideas.
And
I'm not aware of all
and
Sima, of
these. Sima, tell me, I know that you worked a lot with the think tank Demos. Is that how you got involved in this process as well, through, you know, wanting to change your city a little bit?
Yeah, I guess so. And it's been great to be able to mix sort of work projects and also, I mean, and yeah, and I live in Helsinki at the moment, and I think it's important that people, you know, really are interested in what's happening around them. I think that's what people really need. And
for both of you, do you think, you know, when outsiders, people who are not Finnish, they look at the city of Helsinki, do they think it's a fun place? Because in fact, you're describing lots of things which are, you know, you more associate with, you know, downtown New York or something. I wonder, do you think that people have the wrong impression often of Helsinki, that in fact it is a more spontaneous and fun place than perhaps people imagine of Nordic capitals in a way? Look at the two of you, can't you?
Are you being modest?
What do you think? What do you think, Marcus? Do you think that there's a kind of a lag in people's impression of Helsinki, that it is a much more spontaneous and fun place? And
I think Helsinki is something that the role is definitely changing, also how people perceive this country abroad. You know, like people come here and they actually like, so often you hear people say that, wow, there's actually quite a lot going on over here, didn't expect.
Yeah, definitely, and I think it's also good that it's, you know, also been mixing with the but like now, like once people really started doing all these things, you know, anything from Restaurant Day to Cleaning Day to different sort of activities, and then they noticed that, okay, well, people abroad are actually also interested in this, you know, our everyday fun activities. So we don't need to be like looking at traditional, like what's the next hot monument to look at or something, but this is the actual thing that's good about Helsinki.
Well, Anna Pekarinen and Sima Vastanen, thank you very much for joining us here in the studio. And you're listening to a special Midori House that's live from Helsinki. Now, very soon we're going to be talking to Lissu Moulton, a New Yorker who moved to Finland, and then on to Nakkila, a little village that consists of a school, a shop, a church, and not much else.
From London, this is Monocle 24.
Londonist, New Yorkist, Hong Kongist ja Tokiost.
Sie sind Monocle 24. Aus London, das ist Monocle 24.
Από το Λονδίνο, αυτό είναι το Monocle 24.
Вы слушаете Monocle 24.
Λόντωστε καζίν, τέμα ον Monocle 24.
Λόντον μπορ, έζα Monocle 24.
Λόντζαντα, μπορέσε Monocle 24.
Λόντενιστ, σύνο Monocle 24.
De Londres, essa é a Monocle 24.
O que é que você está Monocle 24.
Isso é o Monocle 24.
Você escuta Monocle 24.
Isso é o Monocle 24.
Du lyssnar på Monocle 24.
Kuuntelet Monocle 24.
Você está Monocle 24.
Isso é es Monocle 24.
Isso é Monocle 24.
Em Monocle 24, Albert, yeah.
And it's 8 minutes to the top of the hour. You are listening to Midori House live from Helsinki. Our next guest is able to offer a crash course on how to survive in Finland and what being Finnish really involves. We're joined by Lisa Moulton, a New Yorker who has now lived in Finland for over 20 years.
And oh my even, God, that makes me survived, sound old.
Has even survived those dark winters. Hello, Lisa.
Hello.
And tell us, how on earth did you end up here in the first place?
It was everybody thinks it's because I don't know, that I fell in love with somebody Finnish or whatever. It was totally by accident. I
got on the wrong plane.
It's a long story. Yeah. I thought I was going to California or something, or London, and then I ended up in Finland. No, I came here in high school as an exchange student, to make a long story short.
And you fell in love with the place?
No. Or you... Just one of those, I mean, you know, one thing led to another kind of thing. I came from Manhattan, from New York City, and I ended up in, Marcos can tell you the kind of context, a tiny little town, because basically I really wanted to go to Stockholm. I thought that sounded cool. And they sent me the papers back and they said, well, what about Finland? And I was at Finland and I looked on the map and I was like, well, that's close enough to Stockholm. And then I thought, well, if they put me in Helsinki, I guess I can handle it for a year. But, you know, if it's anywhere farther than outside of Helsinki, I'm going to go crazy.
I like someone's sense of humor of sending you to Nokia, yeah, then, which is about 5,000 people. It's got a shop, a church, and a school.
I think it's less than 5,000 people, isn't it? Maybe.
We have to check that later.
And just tell me that, you know, we joke about it, but what's funny is that when you go around Helsinki, there still isn't that many outsiders here. It's still you know, it's still at the kind of the edge of Europe, and it's not the first place that people think of going to. And although Finns are very welcoming to tourists and people coming here for a week or 2 weeks, actually, after a while, they want you to speak Finnish. And yeah, if you want to get a job here, they want you to speak Finnish.
Definitely.
And probably Swedish too. And,
at least Finnish.
Yeah,
least
and they're Finnish. Not always that sure of bending the rules for outsiders. So did you find it tough kind of edging your way into Finnish society?
I've blocked a lot of it out. It's like a bad bad dream, the beginning, the first parts of it. But I do remember, arriving and they drove me through this little town and they were like, welcome to Nokkila. And they thought this was this, you know, a great thing. And I started burst into tears and I was like, oh my God, what have I got myself into? And then I remember a sign at one point when I first got there saying, Yankee, go home, which was a joke. It was a joke, I have to say, but you know, kind of black humor kind of joke, but dark.
This was on your first day, so I thought it'd be funny to make a poster, yeah, say Yankee, go home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But something went...
Something
clicked. Went really well during that first year as well. I happen to know that you have a tattoo.
Oh, God. Yeah. People ask me about it. They say, what, you know, if I'm wearing something with... It's on my shoulder, and they ask me, you know, what is that? And I'm like, well, it's a joke. It's a bad joke that doesn't... Or sometimes I say it was a birthmark.
What is this tattoo?
It's the coat of arms from that little town that I first came to. And I did get it as a joke, actually. The people who are from this small town thought it was hysterical, and they thought it was a great thing.
Although, as Adrian has been explaining to us, it doesn't matter where you have a tattoo in Finland, because someone will see it inevitably
eventually,
at some
yeah.
point when you're down the sauna.
Yes.
You've managed to learn Finnish. It's one of the toughest languages going, and even Finns say that. Was that a really kind of a complicated process for you? And was there a kind of breakthrough when you began to speak Finnish that you began to understand some of the quirks of this society?
It's so hard to pinpoint. You know, it's an ongoing process. But, you know, today I'm a copywriter. Basically, my main job is I copyright and do concept planning in Finland and for some of the biggest brands in Finland in Finnish, actually, which is, that's something that I think is pretty cool. But I've been here for a long time, so.
But at the same time, I happen to know that there are people who've been here as long as you and and they don't speak as good Finnish as you. Do you think you've been particularly talented with learning languages or have you just...
I'm gifted. I'm just... No. Honestly, I don't think I would be living here anymore. I don't understand the people who've been living here for 25 years and they don't speak any Finnish. I think it really... If you really live someplace and want to really become part of the culture, you have to speak the language.
Give us an example of a quirk of living in Finland that as an outsider you just find really difficult when you first encounter it. What's something you found that it was kind of, you know, oh my God, this what are Finns up to?
Well, of course, that nakedness that Adrian was talking about, but I'm used to that by now. a quirk, let me think.
The food? Are you used
to... The food. I have a good story about the food, actually. When I was in school, in this where I was an exchange student in Nakkila, I went one day. We were all lined up at the food, the cafeteria, having lunch, and I was with my quote unquote sister, my who was in the family I was living with, and I looked down and I saw these red kind of like circular things, and I was like, what is that? And she said, blood. I was like, oh my God, again, for the second time, get me out of here. But
very lento.
Yeah, blood pancakes. Okay. Delicious.
You fancy one of those this evening, do you?
I think I have to take you for very lento.
Yeah, you do.
I think that's one of the charms of Finland that I might actually be able to resist. that's not something I'm going to be persuaded to do anytime soon. But do you think you're here for permanent now then?
Probably, when it comes down to it. I don't like to think about it. I'd love to go back to New York in some ways, but, you know.
Do you think you've been influenced by Finland? Do you think you've got mentally more Finnish?
Yes.
How do you see that? How do you notice that?
My mother says that all the time. If I'm in New York, for example, and somebody comes up on the street and says something, you know, hears me speaking Finnish to somebody else and says, are you speaking Finnish? I just say, yes, and then I look away. Like, you know, I've lost my touch for small talk.
Yes, we've heard all about that.
Yeah.
Well, and there's actually time for no talk at all now because that's the end of this very special edition of Midori House here in Helsinki. Today's show was produced by Marcus Hippie. Our researcher was Adrian Craddock. That's the one without any clothes. And our studio manager in Helsinki was Raimo Utranainen. And that's almost murdered. But anyway.
At 2200 hours London time, it's turn for the Monocle Daily with Emma Nelson and Tamsin Smith. And Midori House will be back tomorrow, live from London. Headlines are next and the latest edition of The Urbanist after the news. Thank you so much from Helsinki. And Andrew, for the last thing, I'd like you to say that in Finnish.
Well, you haven't told me...
Kiitos Helsingistä.
Kiitos Helsingistä, man. Well, nearly. The first part was right, wasn't it?
That was really good, actually.
That was great.
Amazing.
I think you should stay. Forget about going back to London.
I'll be here for another 20 years.
Thank you. News next.